Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, we're back again, and once again, having arrived at the place of like, yes, let's talk about, what should we talk about? We decided to to pull a card. And so once again, I'm going to give a shout out to an absolutely exquisite oracle deck. This time, the art is by the wonderful fairy artist Brian Froud, who lives just down the road from here, and the text by the extraordinarily wise Jessica Macbeth. And this deck is so worth reading, even if you have no interest whatsoever in decks, frankly. Jessica Macbeth, I've never met her. I don't know anything about her other than the fact that she wrote the words for the Fairy's Oracle. But they are so wise. There is so much beauty and wisdom in this book. And, you know, obviously ravishing art, courtesy of Brian Froud.
Can you hold it up to the screen so I can see it?
Mm.
Oh, yes. Oh, as a little girl, I would have just fallen in love with that colour.
Oh, my goodness. The whole thing. I mean, they're just, his art is extraordinary and it's very clear from one who sees fairies that these have been drawn by
somebody
one
who genuinely perceives fairies. Yes.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, it's so beautiful. So, The card that I've picked for us to speak about is the Master Maker. So we are to talk about skill, craftsmanship, magician, moral strength, invention. And the bit that caught my eye just down the page is, no job is too small to do beautifully. And I thought that was such important instruction for life, really.
Stop the podcast now, because that's all we need to say. No, it's too small to do beautifully. And we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's wonderful. By the way, there may be doggy sounds, because Druid is here again, doing a bit squeaky. And in the room with me is Sappho, our new beagle, currently excavating parts of her body. So there may be bits of doggy noises in the background from either end of us today. Oh, nothing is too... That takes me immediately to, and I can't remember which spiritual teacher first said it. It was probably Nat Thich. I can't remember how you took
it. Nat Hart.
Thank you. About washing up consciously.
Oh, do tell. Sounds good.
Well, it's this old thing of what you do, as we say again and again, how you do
something is how you do everything.
And washing up consciously means actually looking at everything you've used and celebrating what you used it for and the fact that you have it to use and that its shape and its beauty and washing it consciously and being there for a meditative washing up. And I still don't do it very often, but when I do, it's quite amazing.
Mm.
And when I do very little things and remember to be conscious, those are the things that actually imprint us really special things in memory.
Yeah.
And we once went to a restaurant in Santa Croce, Florence, at a time when we were very, very broke, and it was a cheap weekend break in Italy. Mm. And we took the train from Lucca to Florence, which is about €6 return for the two of you, which is marvellous. And we found this restaurant, and it was a little bit more than our budget could, but we'd saved up for the last night meal.
Mm.
Went to the La Bocca d'Amma, and Lan was outside having a cigarette, and they bought the wine. We had a glass of wine each, and it was quite a large glass with a pitiful amount of wine in it. I thought, absolutely pitiful for the money. And I could feel myself getting resentful about it.
Mm.
And I was able to step back and say, do not ruin your last night with this resentment. What can you do with this small glass of wine? And so I actually thought, no, I have to really get conscious about this. So I looked at the wine and I just looked at the colour and I looked at the room through the wine and I just adored the timbres of the colour, the different shades in the colour and the different light. And then I smelt it. And I didn't drink it at all in the 5 minutes before Lion came back. But that glass of wine became the best glass of wine ever.
Yeah.
And I will always remember that glass of wine because I took it into consciousness instead of letting it be my ego. So that's not enough.
Yeah.
Is that, that's the kind of thing, isn't it?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. And imagine, you know, imagine if we applied that level of what I guess we would call mindfulness now to absolutely everything we did. When you were talking about doing the washing up in the first place, I was suddenly thinking, yeah, not only do we typically not pay attention to, well, you know, this is the fork that transferred the food to my mouth. Well done. Good job.
Mm.
We don't spend any seconds at all thinking somebody made that. Before that, somebody designed it.
Yes.
If it's made of metal, then that was dug out of the earth somewhere and it comes from somewhere. And it's had, as an artifact, it's had its whole, this extraordinary journey before it ever did the job of moving food from the plate to your mouth.
Yes, and the metal was fashioned.
Yeah.
And even if it was mass-produced, they had to build machinery to mass-produce it.
Yeah.
The collaboration that brings that one little unthought-of thing to your plate is extraordinary.
Yeah. And that we have, you know, we think of a fork as normal, and yet the different peoples of the world eat off very different things. Mm. You know, anything from your fingers to like prongy sticks
and chopsticks. And the fork, I think, was the last invention of cutlery that we know of. Spork came along after that.
Yeah. How very modern of you.
Or very common in my mother's parlance.
Yeah.
Yeah, how you do something is how you do everything. But, you know, if we did that, we would have to live a slower lifestyle.
If we paid attention to everything.
We would have to. I was a great fan of what was known as the slow food movement, which originated in Italy.
Yes.
And I do slow masses.
Do you?
That sounds really weird, but I had to do some requiem.
Immediately recently. It fills me with dread. That's so funny.
Yes, of course.
Explain it does. A slow mass. It's not a very droning long...
Exactly. If I was sitting in church and the priest is doing a slow mass, I'm going, oh, for God's sake, please. No, it's just when I do it on my own, and you can do a low mass or a requiem or a healing mass for somebody in my church on your own. You're usually meant to do a mass with other people if you can, but of course if they don't show up or you've got a lockdown, you can't. But instead of gabbling it, which becomes very tempting after a while, I've got to do three requiem in a week.
Mm.
Oh, God, I've already done two requiems. I'm bored. Requiems, requiem, whichever. You know, so no, as soon as I'm getting along that, I go, I'm going to actually sit on the floor with this, light the candles, sit on the floor and ponder each sentence. And it will take me twice as long, but it's far more fulfilling for me because I'm going into the meaning behind the words. How was that put? And it says, you know, I bow down before you or anything like that. What does that mean? Mm, where is my resistance to this? And in our form of the general confession, there's a bit where, here is my life, I offer it to you, do with me as you will. And I always have to sit with that.
Mm.
Because I always have to acknowledge all the parts of me that say to God, you can't mess with this. Mm. And
I don't want to surrender my will.
Yes, I'll surrender all this, but I won't surrender my marriage. I won't surrender my dog. You've taken dogs before. So, you come in on the, oh, here are all the little blocks in me and all the parts of me that I do not wish to surrender to the great mother or the great father or the great whatever, the great kahuna.
That's really interesting to me, simply because from where I sit, what we're here for is to be free will, embodied. And, you know, back to what we were saying last time, free will is the thing that the spirits want us to exercise, it seems to me. And that the dance between that prayer, my will be thy will be my will.
Yes.
On the one hand, that what we want, what I want certainly most of all, is to be in true alignment with the divine, and so that my will is the will of the gods, kind of thing.
Yes.
But that always that what the spirits seem to be asking of us is yes, to have your will in alignment with the divine. Yes, to be harmonious and respectful and reciprocal and aware of all the ways in which your life and everything in it is them. But also, don't be that one who sits there kind of maiden-like, wiping her brow, going, I'll do anything for you, spirits, because they're just going to take the piss out of you, because they don't want that. You know, trickster is the oldest and the most kind of the one who'll just go, ha-ha, if you, you know, yeah. behave like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't want silly little servants.
Mm.
They want service, not servitude.
Yes,
and they want co-creation. So important. Co-creation, yeah. Exactly. So when you sit there going, I'll do anything you like, but I'm not divorcing him, you're staking your claim on your life as an embodied being in a way that is expressing free will.
Oh, thank you. That's really helpful. Yeah.
I think it's really important because also, you know, it's very unlikely to be the will of the gods that you divorce Lion and lose everything. But, you know, also it's an alive dance. And back to that thing, the master maker, the skill and the craftsmanship and the magic and the moral strength with which we craft our own lives.
Yes.
Then will tend to mean that our free will does become in alignment with what is beauty, what is beautiful, what is harmonious, etc., etc. And so, you know, divorcing Lion would become a thing that you were willing to surrender.
I was expecting God to kill him, actually.
Really? Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
I get that totally. But then that's, you know, his story then becomes involved as well, and his dance with.
Yeah. Now, as usual, you've just put it so succinctly what I've been struggling around trying to say. But that's pretty much what I do, because I'll sit there and say, what do I have to offer you? You know, I give offer you my life, do with me as you will. Well, no, I can't say that, really. I offer you this and this and this and this, and I hold this.
Whilst accepting that I am completely your creature and you can...
Absolutely, and I will always close with the reported words of Jesus in Gethsemane, which is, nevertheless, thy will be done.
Yeah.
This is what I would like. This is what I would like to give.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, thy will be done.
Yeah.
Same, because the it's about faith and certainty, which brings us back to this polarity thing. Yes, I meant to say that last time and I completely didn't get round to it, which is faith is the opposite of certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And this world is one where everybody wants to be certain.
Yeah.
Because we have lost so much faith in magic and mystery or letting go of control. And one of the things about egocentric societies is they have to control everything or try and control everything because they have no faith in themselves, let alone a faith in the divinity. No faith that it would turn out okay and that you can align yourself. And we're just not, well, we know we're not, but.
The one thing that's certain is that nothing is certain.
Yes, exactly. Well, the one thing that's certain is that we'll all die and we'll all resurrect in some form. But we don't know the latter part of it. And I think from all the research I've been doing for this Divine Feminine course I've been doing online, and it's been a marvellous course because it's really made me work. Really made me study and read and work. And that's so good for me. But I'm now, of course, and now I've gone off on a different tangent. What was I saying, Susie?
Of course. Something around the certainty of death.
Something about faith and certainty. No, can't remember it. Sorry, everybody.
The ramblings of two rather menopausal ladies.
Way post-menopausal in this
God,
case.
Really? So yeah. You're still, okay. Yeah. So I was kind of imagining that once menopause, you know, the perimenopausal part was over, that the ramblings became less rambly and you regained your dictionary. Is this not the case?
Didn't with me.
Okay. That's disappointing.
But I'm sure it will for everybody else listening. Of course, on the Divine Feminine, well, I'm learning so much. But, that's right. This whole thing from the beginning, which you've spoken about before, but now I know where to look for it. I'm finding it everywhere, is this thing about the feminine being the path of resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
the taking into the death and the resurrecting, the rebirth of everything. And of course, as soon as you go for certainty and you start denying death, then that you're going to push the feminine out, aren't you?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you can't say any clearer than that, can you?
No. Well, that was what I was going to say.
Well done! Excellent. The way you do something is the way you do everything. Right? Yeah. You totally get to nail it.
I burble and burble and then finally remember what I was going to say.
Brilliant. So the other beautiful, beautiful thing that Jessica Macbeth has said in this book is that whenever we are making something, basically, she's saying, go for the gold standard. So in my language, go for the gold standard, in the language of my teacher. Design beyond your skill and then raise the level of your skill to fulfill it. Which, again, that brought me back to the conversation we were having about the fork. Just because when we design anything, our lives, you know, our bedroom, our job or whatever, if we're consciously co-creating with spirits the life we want to lead, which is surely the kind of the dream, if you like, and altogether too often, I think any of us, or well, I guess I'm speaking for myself, I'm the only person I could speak for, but that too often how you're living becomes a reaction rather than a design, if you like, and you forget to try to design. I forget to try to design what it is I want from my life. And when I step back, so I'm trying this right now, and I'm trying to design, for want of a better word, or kind of craft a way of working whereby I don't run around like some kind of mental squirrel going, oh, well, I can't stop because I'm a bit too busy. And, you know, yes, I've got a bit too much on and I know I'm such an idiot. And I heard myself say over and over again last year that if I had a secretary, I'd sack her for overbooking me. Well, I am the secretary that I would sack for overbooking me.
Yeah.
And so this year I've done lots of clever things, like, you know, I've put everything that's in the plan on one sheet of paper, so I can't turn pages and forget what was three pages back. I've got the whole thing planned out. And I'm teetering on the brink of a position where in November 2020, the whole of 2021's got me working every alternate weekend. Well, that's before we even start the freaking year. And just looking at that and going, at the moment, I'm really, really standing with the question, is that how you want to live next year? Is that what you want to do? And I honestly don't know what the answer is. Because on the one hand, I would like to think of the year being more spacious than that. I'd like to think that I could have time off. I mean, I'm historically outrageously bad at having time off, you know. But I'd like to be better. But on the other hand, I want to teach these groups. It's what I'm here for, to a degree. And I really want to give as many people as I can accommodate the opportunity to come and work with me. And because of coronavirus and blah, 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 that almost certainly means it has to be in small groups because the big group venues keep closing. So if I keep it in small groups, I can probably keep going.
Yes.
And I'm standing in that place of, I know I want to craft something. I want to stand in the place of master maker and craft myself a year where, you know, I'm going to up my game so that my skills are properly honed, but that also that I'm starting to have the skill of proper downtime.
Yeah.
Because I can't do, if I'm not allowing myself to go and be in deep connection with the spirits, with nature, which obviously I'm never unconnected from, I'm alive and breathing, but really consciously allowing myself that time to just go, and drop into the arms of all that is to me sacred, then I'll be a shit teacher, frankly.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely identify with that. And I'm very lucky because I've got this spiritual discipline which comes from Kabbalah and from the ordination of my particular bishop of holding the Sabbath.
Mm.
That there must be a day away from the work.
I don't mean this weirdly. Is that enough?
Is no, enough? I'm finding it isn't it is. At the moment. I need to. A friend of mine actually, I said that to her when I was ill. I was saying, one of those I don't understand stupid conversations where I'm trying to find a reason for something when actually the job is to just live with it and work with it and do what you need to it. And I said, I've always taken a Sabbath or a day off every week. And she just said very quietly, well, most people take two.
Mm.
And it's important. I don't always take two. But I am getting, like you, I'm beginning to try and plan this a little bit more. And we have a wall planner, which is a perpetual wall planner, which was such a brilliant purchase about 20 years ago, because you just wipe it off and reuse it, move everything around for next year and leave it cropped up against the wall. If I have a weekend workshop, I'm going to block off the day after.
Yeah, that's what I
block off the Monday. Yes, exactly. Okay. But it is... It's coming back to this tithing thing, or just this perpetual sense, which is connect, receive, give.
Mm.
Don't give from an empty tank. You know, you run out of petrol.
Yeah.
And yes, as you say, your work becomes shit. Well, not shit in your case, but it's not as good as it needs to be.
Yeah.
And yes, the job of the teacher is to keep learning.
Yes, yes, yes.
And we were talking before we started recording about some stuff on social media where people had been not nicking stuff that we've written, but paraphrasing it and putting it out perhaps as themselves or not with attribution. And we were both agreeing that the fact is, on the one hand, your ego goes, oh, but then your true self just goes, great, it's out there.
Mm.
And you know that you will be given more.
Yeah.
That's the thing about when a society that needs to control, it has no trust that there will be more.
Yes.
At any level.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's all about greed and lack simultaneously. Mm. And I got a book called When Society Becomes an Addict by Anne Wilson Schaff, which I first read in the 1990s. And it's all about the addictive system that we live in.
Mm.
And the attributes to it, and it has in it what's known as Lincoln Logs, which you and I would probably call seesaws, which is at one end there's something, at the other end the other thing, and they're completely linked up together. And some of the ones she's got are greed and scarcity, because the more we feed our greed, the more we believe there isn't enough.
Yes.
Greed and stinginess. You're stingy with what you have and greedy about acquiring more. And they and greed and self-denial. If you won't give yourself enough time, then you'll have to grab at whatever is offered. And there's a story about a woman who went blackberrying and ate a whole stomach full of blackberries because she didn't trust that there would be more blackberries another day, or that she'd give herself more time to gather different amounts of blackberries.
Mm.
And we lived like this all the time.
Totally. And this is why we don't have a relationship as a culture with the idea of the honourable harvest. Is because we don't trust enough that there will be more tomorrow. And so we try and take it all today and then, you know, store it and have it all. And if there's loads, then I can take loads.
And then it goes mouldy.
Yeah. I mean, look what happened at the beginning of last lockdown with an unprecedented amount of everything, especially toilet rolls.
And pasta. Yeah.
And pasta, was it? But then an unprecedented amount of wasted food.
Yes.
Because people had bought more than they could ever store or eat before it went off. You know, more than fits in the freezer, more than you can can, whatever. What a waste. What a perfect example of the way in which we are so lacking in harmony with the reciprocity of the earth.
Yes.
And the great, great, great generosity of the earth.
And if when you let go of that, this year, this autumn, I've had such a wonderful example of that. Because every year I pick blackberries and I make blackberry jelly, and these are to give to people. We don't eat much jelly, we don't have toast and jelly for breakfast or something, but I love to make it and I love to give it.
Mm.
And people like it. It's got a lovely energy to it. And this year the blackberries, although they promised very well, didn't come through very well, so I had to pick fewer.
Mm.
at each point. And that was an important lesson, because part of me was going, there aren't going to be enough for all my jams, there aren't going to be enough for all my jams. And I thought, no, come on, trust, it's okay. And then my set all my P's, that kind of thing. And I was like, oh my God, there isn't going to be. No, trust. You're actually in relationship now with the Great Mother. You actually are honouring her in ways you can. This is going to be fine. And I've got a quince tree out the back, and I usually manage to make one tiny pot of quince jelly a year, which I cherish because the colour, apart from anything else. And last time you were able to come round here, I gave you a pot of quince jelly.
I know, I was just feeling so honoured. I have the pot of quince jelly to make too?
Because I was able to let go, and I said, it'll be all right. Let's make what you've got. Don't worry about it. Let go, let go, let God, let go, let God, which is the big challenge for all of us.
Yeah.
Suddenly on the South Taunton and South Seal Facebook page, there's somebody saying, I've got three bags of quinces. Does anybody want them?
Well, hey.
And only two of us wanted them. And one of us took two bags, and then finally she didn't want both of them and gave me the other one. So I had two great big bags of quinces. So I have got quince jelly falling out of my cupboards.
What a glorious lesson.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And in the kitchen today, you can't see our kitchen, there's three gigantic quinces because when... we were given Sappho, who is a former hunt beagle. I had gone on to the hunt directory, said, is there anybody got a girl they need to rehome that they isn't hunting or isn't successful who needs a lovely home? Two of them came up, and we couldn't have both of them at that time. But I had a friend who wanted a hound, so I was able to broker that. And yesterday, she and I went for a walk because you're allowed a socially distanced walk with one other person, and so our two hounds could meet up. And as a way of thanking me for putting me in touch with the Hunt Kennels, which has given her beautiful bitch, Magda, she bought three enormous quinces, and I'm having to go, enough already with the quinces, mother!
Awesome. I love that story. And that just is, you know, that to me is a perfect example of exactly how it goes. And when we do let go and we do say, okay, I trust that if I take as much as I need and no more today, there will be as much as I need and no more tomorrow. And if we all are like that, then there will be as much as we all need.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a thing that is said over and over and over again, is that actually, even with our crazy high population numbers on the planet, there is enough for everyone if we shared it all out.
Yeah.
And it's not that there is a lack. What there is a lack of is sharing.
Yes. And it sort of brings us back to this certainty thing, because we appear to be certain that there isn't enough.
Yeah.
And that we're not enough.
Yeah.
Whereas if we could have the faith of saying, well, maybe today I'm not enough, but I'm connected.
Well, except that we always are enough. Yes, we are. Because we're here to be us.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's another one of the total weirdnesses of the Western world, is that we're constantly comparing ourselves with other people, which there's a lovely thing in, actually, hilariously, another deck of cards, which is the Osho Zen Tarot in there somewhere, which is, if you're into psychology, you will love the Osho Zen Tarot. It's very kind of psychological. And in it somewhere, it says, who would ever consider comparing the dandelion with the daisy? Why, you wouldn't spend any moments at all going, which is more beautiful, the dandelion or the daisy? Yeah. And it is equally ludicrous that we compare ourselves. And that when you get down to it, you know, it's very easy to still be going, oh, but, well, you know, daisies are probably prettier, but dandelion's more useful, you know, because blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
But actually, if you get into homeopathy, Bellis Perennis, the daisy, incredibly potent remedy.
Yeah.
And that's the point, is that we all have our part to play, and it might not at first be obvious, and it might be that our part is literally simply holding the end of one piece of the warp or the weft of life.
Yes.
While someone else goes charging out across it, being that amazing red zigzag or whatever.
Yes.
But that amazing red zigzag cannot be if there is not somebody at the other end holding the line, kind of thing. That's a bit of a messy example.
I get that, because I always used to say, when I was practicing as a hands-on healer, when I lived back in Birmingham, And every now and then you got to be the last piece in the puzzle for somebody.
Yeah.
And they went away from your house healed.
Yeah.
But I was always very aware that that was just that day I got to be the last piece.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I had been the channel of all her healing. It was everything working together.
Yeah.
And when people say to me, you know, what was the secret of your recovery from cancer? I say, there isn't a secret.
No. The secret is I let it all.
Yes. All of it. Mm-hmm. All of it. And I worked with this and this bit didn't work and that bit, but maybe it did work. What do I know? And it was all the step on to the next bit and the next bit. Yes. And I think we're trained in the modern world to think we've got to win. So we've got to be the one with the last piece. Or we've actually got to say all that jigsaw's mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did all of that.
I can't remember. I might have rambled on about this in the podcast before last. I don't know. Stop me if I'm being boring / repetitive.
Stop you.
But... but that, what, again, part of the, if we go back to the master maker idea, part of what we must understand is that not everything's our job at yeah. all, and that as people doing healing work in particular, it's very easy, and you know, back to the planning the diary thing, it's so easy to imagine that we have to do everything. I mean, in my case, I tend to imagine not only do I have to do it all, but I have to do it all now.
Yes.
And that's such a piece of ego. And it's so important to remember that there are things in this world that are quite simply not my job. And when you ask the spirits, is this my work to do? Sometimes the answer is no. And if you're not asking that question and you're not saying, is this mine to do? Then... And you're just going, you know, yes, to everyone, whether you've got the time or the inclination or not. And that what's happening then is not only are you depriving that person of the appropriate last piece in the jigsaw, you're also depriving the person whose job it really was of their opportunity to be the last person in the jigsaw. And it's, you know, it's a really double done wrong.
Yeah. I once knew a woman who was a personal assistant when I worked in local radio, BBC local radio, who had breast cancer. And this was many, many years ago, 30 years ago. And she'd had surgery and I think she may have had some chemotherapy. But anyway, she was back at work. And I said to her, Betty, why are you back at work? You know, shouldn't you be taking more time off? And she said, oh, well, Jeremy needs me. And then a couple of days later, I saw her and she was utterly exhausted. You could see she was grey. And she told me this story. And even back then, before I had any real spiritual awareness, I was just horrified. And I knew she was going to do herself in. Because basically her fully grown adult son still lived at home. She still looked after him because one of the attributes of breast cancer is overgiving. It's over-nurturing from the breast.
I see that.
And because cancer is something that expands and expands and has no breaks. And her son had broken down on the motorway at 2 o'clock in the morning. And she'd gone out in her car to fetch him and tow him home, even though she was still recovering from chemotherapy. And I said, well, why didn't he have the RAC? Because in those days I had the RAC because I had regular wage and that kind of thing. And I made the assumption. And she said, oh, well, he knew I would get him. And I just knew it. I thought, my God, you're just not living a life for you at all. It's all about giving to other people. And the desperate thing about that is how many of us get our self-esteem from what other people think of us. So I've got to be helpful, so you will love me. And it never works because self-esteem is an inside job.
Yeah, totally.
And bless her, she did die. And of course, she left a son who was totally incapable of looking after himself because his mum had always done it for him out of love or control.
Yeah. Ouch.
And that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening again, and we'll see you next week.
Bye bye.